Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Paul, thanks for being here, brother. Man, I'm excited to talk. I love this because you've done so much and you oversee so much that this conversation go a lot of different ways. So I appreciate you taking the time.
No, you got it, Stan. And it's great to catch up again. And, you know, I was always super impressed with you. And I knew you'd be a superstar. And you're crushing it in all aspects of your career. So I'm excited to be on. And, you know, I think it's important that I started my own show, and it's called Small Steps, Big Wins. But really, what's important is I'm going to talk a lot about that today. If you just take these little steps, you just win big in our industry. And I kind of relate it to being an athlete. So I'm excited to spend some time with you today.
Sounds good. Well, I want to hit that because I remember when I first was able to hang around you, your story was not the advisor that, hey, I did small things for 40 years and eventually became successful. You're an outlier. Even in the trips I would go on, you were kind of the outlier within the outliers. So what would you say to that at this point? If there's a bunch of advisors listening that kind of what they've heard about the business is make a bunch of calls, hopefully you should survive, and then eventually maybe someday you'll be successful. That's kind of the general message that the industry is telling people. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that I kind of turned it on its head. So like when I think of it as an advisor, I kind of started out like that, right? They came in, get your project 200, like it was on paper. You know, I've been in the business a lot longer than you. I've been in the business 34 years and I knew there was a better way. So I challenged immediately when I got there as an advisor, you know, being 22, I said, we don't have like sort of a CRM system here or a way to like manage our clients, right? And we don't really market and we just have to call. And so when I became a GA CEO, it was small. We had only 9 advisors, 3 staff. The place was bankrupt, right? And I looked around at, and remember, I was in the insurance-based broker-dealer then, and I was really competing with other insurance-based firms. There wasn't a lot of independence at that time. And so I looked around, and we were in Connecticut, in Trumbull, Connecticut. And I started out as an advisor in Brooklyn. So I moved to a place I didn't know anyone, you know, with this startup, bankrupt place. And there was one firm in New York City and there was another firm in Norwalk, Connecticut that the GAs were like legends in the industry that I read about. And I started looking at their value prop and they had like advanced market attorney. Well, I couldn't afford that, right? They had this, they had that. And not like what we have today, and I'm sure we'll get into that later, but they had robust compared to where I came from and what I was trying to recruit people. I had a vision, but then I needed some substance. So I started to think to myself, I asked a lot of questions, an advisor, what do you need to grow your practice? Close your eyes and tell me the 3 things. And every single one of them said, I need to get in front of more clients. And I remember predicting when someone came in that was somewhat successful. I'd say like, dude, how many meetings you get a week? And I could literally write a piece of paper, like almost like a magician, and write the number 4. And they were getting 4 or 5 and they were successful.
Yeah.
So I said, if I can get you 4 or 5 more, how much more business? I would do 3 times more. So I started this journey of a marketing firm. And that was in the mid-90s. And then in 2099, I added to that was that did financial planning. Because what happened to me was I started out on the insurance side. Now we're fast forward, we're starting to sell annuities and wealth management. And what I learned was you don't just wake up and find affluent clients.
Right.
So I'm like, how am I going to get my case? So remember, there's really, it's pretty simple. See more, sell bigger. Like you just have to keep that in the back of your mind. And like we have a sophisticated, high touch business now. We have a lot of technology, but when you really get down to grassroots as an advisor, you got to see more people and then you got to sell, you got to get your case size bigger. So planning was a great way that you can get into a household and get all the products. Why let that all go to your competitor? Yep. And that was the journey. Started out as a marketing firm that did financial planning. So I think when kids come in today, the first thing they have to do, and if we're talking to advisors that you're working with, I'm sure most of them have all their licenses, but not everyone does.
That's right.
So get all your licenses, get all your credentials, but then figure out, one, how do you get all those products? And if you don't want to sell them all, then get someone to partner up that will sell them. And I think it's table stakes today to do wealth management. You know, you hear all different philosophies, but I believe wealth management, annuities, and then protection. If you can do that, you will build a wall around your clients. You'll make sure that they retire properly and they have the protection, and you'll be able to make a great living. And then now, how do you figure out to build this conveyor belt to do this? The natural market thing, that's going to work for the 10%ers, but not for the other 90.
Yeah.
So it was a long answer.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think I would say it's more fair that most advisors do not have an extremely warm-ish hot market to just tap into.
Correct.
That there needs to be some kind of baseline of this marketing hat that I think most advisors have a hard time putting on. It's like, well, we'll try to sell stuff more, which means run into more people hoping they need to buy something. Yeah. But that's not really marketing. That's just like crossing your fingers and hoping it works out.
Correct. And they have to figure out, like, hopefully they have someone helping them to do it. But how do you get in front of the right people at the right time and then help them with their goals? And listen, Stan, I was one of these advisors that I played three sports. I was a pretty good athlete. I knew a lot of people. I was very social. So my market really responded. And I violated all the principles of a new advisor. They told me, get on the phone, book 15 meetings. But I was getting, the question was, do I need to see 10 people or make three sales? And they said, well, you're not going to make three sales if you don't see 10 people. So I said, what if I see five and make three? So I violated all the principles, right? And then I woke up after making my first like leaders conference in 9 months, where I really didn't have a lot of meetings. And I'm like, I better step up or else I'm going to be the most successful failed out of the business. And then I became this marketing machine through doing lots of different things at that time, like direct mail, telemarketing. Like I did a lot of stuff.
Yep.
Now I had like target markets, and I went from like five meetings a week to like 25. Nice. And then I took that to the firm and then just, you know, continued evolving it over the last 30 years.
So your journey, you were an advisor, sound like kind of the dream recruit. Go after, you know, they go after us ex-athletes and just tell us to go get them.
Yep.
What was the progression there? Because I know for me, especially early on, I was like, I don't want to deal with other people. I just want to grow a super healthy practice, make a bunch of income for myself and be able to come and go as I please.
Yep.
What was the progression into management, leadership, to eventually running, I mean, one of the largest firms in the country at this
point? Thank you. Well, I think it was different because remember back then, it was B and C talent was coming in this business. It was like the closest thing. Like I came in 1991, and I would say that there was not the talent that you see today in the business. And it was just life insurance, right? So when I went home, my dad was like, you just graduated college and you're going to go sell life insurance. Like my mom, thank God, backed me. But I was one of the first kids that they hired off the campus. And I kind of forced my way in because they wanted someone that had two kids, a wife, you know, car payments and a mortgage. And they had to make money. I wanted to build the business, right? So the GA that recruited me by far was the most successful person in the firm. I was always like captain of all my teams. So I was naturally a leader. So when I saw that, I just said, how do I get to leadership? And remember back then, you know, at MetLife, there was probably like 1,000 firms nationally. Mm-hmm. So they would take someone that was successful in sales and give them a shot. And that's kind of what happened to me. I moved up to Connecticut and I had this great vision, and the vision just kept growing. But I spent 2.5 years in the field, really a lot more than that, because when I got here, I did not have the infrastructure. So I did joint field work for probably 10 or 12 years where I was going out with someone like you and teaching that to eventually you phase out of that and do the other things. But I think, so that was kind of the journey. And I think what happened when I got here, that concept of the marketing firm and thinking differently, really, even though I was in what they call today, they would call a managerial system, I was an entrepreneur. So I figured out how to work in a system that was managerial, but leverage all the things I needed to help me be an entrepreneur and act like an entrepreneur. So that was a big differentiator for me. Yeah. And then I started to, in the late 90s, I think one of the things I did was I changed the game on that recruit. Mm-hmm. I realized that planning was big. And I started going after advisors that were some experience, 2 years, mm-hmm. that were in like those hybrid companies that are out there today and that were doing planning. And I had built some great programs where we're doing financial education in the workplace. So I was recruiting them right into, I was throwing 25-year-old young advisors into, you know, Fortune 500 companies to do financial education in the workplace. And they were smart kids, so they had to learn and grow quickly.
Yeah.
But I think I just turned it on its head a little bit, but that was kind of my journey. And the other part that was really big was moving, like moving from Brooklyn to Connecticut. Like that was like a whole different world. Like I was in a city and I went where you know, I didn't have a market, and then just got to work here and built Barnum. To me, not only that was big, the leadership, but also building a culture of family.
Hmm.
Where this became our extended family, because our family was back in Brooklyn, you know?
Oh, yeah. What does the firm look like today? Advisor count, support?
So we have about 360 FAs right now. We're in probably 12 or 13 different states, you know, all over the country. Like we have offices in Seattle, we have offices in Charleston, Savannah, Florida. You know, all through the Northeast. We have about, on the Barnum staff, I have about 145 people that support those advisors. Mm-hmm. And then if you start to add all the staff that our advisors have that sit in our locations, I think we're up to about 650 people that rely on us on a daily basis to do that.
So 9 advisors and 3 staff to 360 advisors and hundreds of
Yeah. And it's crazy and growing. And we have, you know, assets between AUM and AUA, whatever, how you say it. We have about 45 billion right now, and about 300,000 clients.
And you have no sense of scarcity as far as enough opportunity for all your advisors?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, on my show, I say it every single week that COVID was really bad and there was so much bad that came of it. But we had this vision of being a national firm in 2020. I laid out that we were regional, always looking to be national, but we truly became national overnight. And now we have this partnership that we have over 1 million opportunities that we're feeding to our advisors on a day-to-day basis, you know, year to year. Mm. Probably it's about 1.2 million in terms of opportunities, real opportunities. So our advisor is selling in all 50 states. And when a new advisor comes on board, like the biggest question is how many states do I get licensed in? And most of our top advisors look like you. They're in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s, and they've built like, they have their own distribution channel within our distribution channel now. And I think I give them a lot of credit because I've been pushing, mm-hmm. and I have a bold vision, you know, we'll do a couple of hundred, we'll do about $220 million of revenue. And our vision is to do $1 billion by 2030. So we're going to 5X this thing, but we only did 95 in 2020. So 4 years, it's been huge growth for us, you know?
Yeah, I love hearing that. So I have a question, and this is partly kind of my past experience of the larger firm model. I know I came into Northwestern Mutual and appreciated the training, but I always kind of had this entrepreneurial itch that I was like, it doesn't feel like that's going to be satisfied here. So then I jumped to Raymond James, and I was like, hey, investments are fun, but the kind of the office I ended up in was, you know, all A shares all the time. Everybody needs to have 4,000 clients. And I was like, that doesn't feel right either. And then jumped into some other firms where it feels like the whoever the GA is, you know, they're creating their own ecosystem that can be very different from other GAs.
Yeah.
As I was in some of those models, what happens, the more successful I got, the less prepared they were to help me. Yet the more money they were making off my book. And like most of the resources went to like, we got to get these young guys and gals up and going. But as soon as you hit some level of success, they're like, hey, good for you. We're going to keep taking our cut. Your firm somehow has continued to appeal to very, very successful advisors and seems to be avoiding where it's like once advisors start making $1 million, $2 million, it's almost inevitable that they're going to jump out. So
quite the opposite here. And I'm laughing because
Let's unpack that because that's my personal story. You know, I didn't get to work directly with you, but it was almost a matter of time before I left. And it was frustrating because I kind of wanted to stay.
Yep.
But it's like the numbers at some point, I was like, I just have to go because I'm kind of paying for all my own stuff anyways. I'm doing stuff that's different than the firm that's more successful. Yeah. And they're kind of almost getting in my way. Because I know younger advisors listening, there's such value in joining like a built system with mentors and leads. Like, yet I think some enough people are not doing it in the right way to where it's kind of, I think, put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth.
Yeah. So about 20 years ago, I wrote, We had, it used to be called the Barnum Blaze. It's now called the Barnum Grind. But I wrote an article in there about Ken Bannister, the 4-Minute Mile, right? And he was the first, no one ever said you could do it. He did it. And then I think the story is like 38 people did it within that year. So for us, being a $1 million producer back then was like the 4-Minute Mile. I got one to do it and then many followed, right? Well, just to give you, so we just had our top, every year we take our top guys away for a couple of days and it's all development and we have a lot of fun, but it's really digging in and growing, right? And we put a top agenda on. So I opened up with this slide of the 2020 production and this group of 50 did $35 million of revenue in 2020. In 2024, they're going to finish with about $87 million. So I want to say it again, 34 to 87 in 4 short years. Okay. And then what I did was we had $1,000,000, $2,000,000, $3,000,000, $4,000,000, $5,000. So we had like, I don't remember the numbers exact, but we had only like a couple at 2 million, a bunch at 1 million, and then a lot at 500 to 1 million. Mm-hmm. Well, now this year we'll have a couple break 6 million, a few break 5, and they were only doing 1 million in 2020. Okay. And they're like, they look just like you. And if you fast forward to 2028 and throw the same growth factor on, those guys are doing like 13 million of revenue, individual person, not a team. This is one producer. So the key thing is, I'm showing the same slide next week when I have my leadership retreat. We have to think differently. They're not going to go because they did it in four. They're not going to do it again just because we say, oh, look, you did this much. So we have to build an ecosystem that helps them to continue to grow. And, you know, I show up every day and I haven't said this in a long time because no one's asked the question the way you did, but I drive to work every day and say, hey, I was Paul Blanco. I was hired by ABC Consulting Firm to help Barnum to grow. And then I leave each day and say, what did I do to help it grow? So when you look at the people that I put around me, the leadership and the innovation, so we've built things like we have a tool right now for our Inforce book. It's called B2. We've commercialized it. We have about almost 40 other firms using it right now. So I want you to think about this, Stan. Think about life insurance, annuities, wealth management, and think about you servicing that book and having 1,000 clients. Well, what this tool does, we call them tiles. It has 65 tiles. Okay, I have 7 people that do coding around the clock for us. And I have my CTO came from a major insurer that he worked 23 years. That tool will tell an advisor when to call a client and why. And think about make it up, term conversion, living. How about living benefits? All those living benefit annuities you sold.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you hit a button, you look at Paul Blanco, and let's say I have $1 million with you and it's with, Lincoln, and you hit a button, it'll tell you, it'll shop the whole market for you and tell you where to move it and why, what's best interest for the client. Mm-hmm. So we've built tools like that so these advisors can scale their practices to just grow massive amounts. We have, a wealth strategies division where I have, 12, 13 wholesalers for every discipline. So you don't have to go out and learn. You just call them. They don't get commission. They're on your team. They're an extension of you. They'll do client meetings. And by the way, the old days, if I had my high-end life wholesaler, if he had to travel, he might be able to do 2 meetings in a day. Now he could do 8 or 9 because he could Zoom in.
Mm-hmm.
We've built the lead programs. We have for young advisors, we have a role that we developed with one of our top teams here called the BDA, Business Development Associate. They come on and get a salary. They get on the phone. They get a bonus based on what they source to the team. And that the teams are doubling down on that and then those kids are getting all their licenses. Actually, some of them are even sitting for their CFP in 2 years and then becoming a full-time advisor. But in the meantime, the team is just scaling up and do that. We've built service advisors where team are hiring and we're finding them for them, where they're going on the team and we're saying, all right, earmark, we're going in and saying, you need your team so big, you need 4 service advisors, but we're just not saying that and then running. Mm-hmm. Then our talent acquisition teams go in to find them. We're building the MOUs for those people. We're helping coach them and they're investing, but we're doing all the heavy lifting and developing those people with them in partnership. So when you start to do that,
mm-hmm.
they're all so happy. And then we scale everything else. Compliance is scaled. HR is scaled. Like if you need staffing, you call our team, we'll help you go find the staffing. So we've tried to build an ecosystem to help all the advisors to continue to grow. And here's the different thing. And I came up with this probably 20 years ago. It's easier or less hard for me to take you from $1 million of production to 2 million
mm-hmm.
than it is in for me to go find someone to do 1 million. So everything we've built has had the top producers in mind. And then it cascades down versus what you said, just trying to survive these people. And we have a pretty good retention rate on 1 to 4s. We're like almost 50%.
That's great.
Wow. So we're changing the game,
I love that. Yeah. I think as I put myself in different stages of advisors that I run into and we coach, you have the new advisor, which you really don't know what the path is. The industry does not do a good job of saying, hey, join, follow these steps and you'll be successful. So linking up with a team or a firm that's like, no, we have the path.
Yeah.
Let us help you get there faster. That to me is a no-brainer. Like if you're young listening to this, like being on your own or being around other advisors that are not doing creative big things is not the path. But then you have these advisors that have been successful enough, but they're kind of stuck. Maybe they don't even understand how big their business could be, or they say, hey, I just don't want to work that much. As you guys go and get talent, which I think that role is beautiful. That's such a gift to every advisor because that's a time-consuming thing to do. Do you guys equally go after inexperienced to experienced, or are you saying we're so good now at developing people, we're going to bring them in to help our top teams, then naturally they're going to become our future advisors?
We do it. We have a pretty balanced approach, but we probably bring in 60 new people a year. 40 of them are kids off the campus. But I was just telling someone, we had 28 kids in our August class. 24 of them already or have their seven and are registered and going at it. And they're on the phones all day. They're booking up meetings for their senior partners. They're learning to sell the basic stuffs and teeing up the senior guys. And by the way, I have teams like my Seattle team spoke at our top producer meeting. They have three advisors on their team that are crushing it that are on Long Island, and they're in Seattle.
Nice.
So the world is flat now. And because of the infrastructure and the value prop, we have a real partnership. The other thing that's pretty cool is you might be listening as an advisor and saying, oh my God, if I hook up with Blanco, he's going to expect me to grow from 3 million to 8. No, I say this is as much as we're a team, and this is what I've taught the top advisors here. If you help me get to the vision we have that's pretty bold, and we've been knocking those down every year, I'm going to continue investing and pouring the money in and investing to help you grow. Just meet me in the middle. But if you don't want to, that's cool. Like, you just build the best practice. We'll pick our spots where we help you. So I'll give you an example of that. I have one of my top guys. He's like a $3 million. He's a 45-year-old guy. It's actually his birthday today. I have to call him in a little while. But he has his practice. It's a planning-based practice. It's like 250 plans a year, all retainers. And he's hooked up with my marketing team. We set up like an agency. So what we did was we said, all right, how do we scale this thing? We have 11 full-time people, all disciplines. When you think of marketing, there's so many digital disciplines you have to have. There's a content manager, there's a video person, there's a big thinker. Like, we have all that, the brand people. So we have all that built, and everyone gets X. So everyone gets all this, which is way more than what you would get on the outside.
Yep.
But then off to the side, we built an agency that we say, all right, you need a new web build. You need this, you need that, you need articles, we'll help. And we charge like a tenth of what you would go to an agency, but we already know how to get it through compliance. And I love to tell the tree story. If you think of a tree, I could sit on the bottom or the top, wherever you want to put me. I don't have an ego that big. I have an ego, of course, but it's not that big. You could put me either way. But I say, when we meet with advisors, my leadership team, we see all the advisors because we're on the bottom or the top. Mm. Where the advisor sees the person to the right, to the left, the bottom and top. Mm. So we can go and work with one team, and they say, like, one of my teams did an intro video. They have like seven people on their team. It's like a 2-minute, like, when you're a new client, you get to meet the whole team virtually through this video.
Nice.
And now like four of the teams just did it. They did it differently,
yeah.
But they saw it and we all share. So I think the cool thing is our ecosystem, we've tried to think of anything we possibly could. And we try to build that to cater to the advisors. And the partnership is, you know, I still coach a ton of them, but I have a full-time coach here that she works with the teams and helps them to build out their models, questions them, and really builds a roadmap. Then I come in and their sales leaders come in. And then all of our infrastructure, it's pretty powerful how we're able to just grow them. And we just think differently.
Yeah. When you think about I'm just trying to get in the head of all the advisors listening to where it's, this is a lonely business if you let it be. If you think of growing your practice, a lot of times it's, well, I have to invest a lot. I have to hire people. I may not be good at that. The opportunity, and I think it's a scary opportunity, because if you hitch your wagon to somebody, that feels somewhat permanent in a way. So when you think about culture and somebody entering into that, what's the standard? I'm sure there's people that would get around you guys and be so freaked out, they wouldn't even last. So as you think about culture, it's like, you don't have to build a $6 million business, but you're going to work and you're going to be engaged and you're going to try new things. Like, what would be your explanation of culture that would attract the right person and then push the person away that doesn't want to?
You know, I think people just, it's not, so you talked about a company earlier. I would say you have to be careful between culture and cult, right?
Mm.
Meaning, so we have a culture of embracing everybody. We have integrity and high values, right? Performance is really up to the individual. So we have a lot of advisors that see me at my kickoff or a mid-year. They probably have 10 big events that they come to. And they're like, dude, I can't wait to meet. I'm going to set up a meeting with you. I'm like, call my assistant, Jody. And they never call because they don't want to have that standard put on them. But they're great people.
Yeah.
So what we're looking for is just people that want to continue to grow and do a good job for their clients. And we someone says clients, advisors and clients say to me all the time, who's your market? And I say, it's everyone. What do you mean? Well, I have advisors all the way at this end that are doing all this production. I have the brand new kid that's trying to work with the 35-year-old. Now, my new kids are a little spoiled because they're already pumped into the retirement market because we have these programs that are built, but they have to learn quickly. So I would say it's a culture of it's fun, it's fast-paced. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, we look for people to be lifelong learners. But nothing's mandated. Like we had our top producer meeting, like I said, 3 weeks ago. We do it in Newport, Rhode Island all the time. And my teams that are all over the country, they fly in because they want to learn and grow and be around that. But the ones that don't, it's not like we call them and say, hey, why aren't you coming?
Yeah.
That's up to them. That's up to them because they all have different goals and objectives that they want to. And we've tried to scale it so that we can help everyone.
Yeah.
But if we could just make that person's life easier or less hard, then we won.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can't help, for better or worse, you're going to start resembling the people you hang out with. And so for everyone listening right now, if you do not have a high level of confidence in the people you hang out with, that they push you. I mean, some of the numbers that Paul's talking about would freak most firms out. Like there's no way to get to a billion in that short period of time, but just being around people that talk that way will make you better.
We'll
definitely put in our show notes, like how to, you know, Paul's firm, look at their website. Like it is an impressive business you built. But before we wrap up, I want you to say something, but I also want to kind of say, if you gave two pieces of advice to any advisor, knowing that most advisors are underperforming to some degree, somewhat limited in their understanding of business growth and what they can actually grow to, I'd love to kind of give us like some direct feedback on that.
Yeah, I think the first thing is to look inward, right? And I think it's really important that you get yourself right. And I mean, like, you don't have to work out, but get up in the morning and get your morning routine locked and loaded, whatever it is. But get that routine. What I find is the best entrepreneurs in any business have great self-discipline.
Mm.
So get really disciplined. Like someone said to me the other morning, like, yeah, I was on my show and said, he was one of my advisors he was probably 40 pounds overweight and he just lost it. And he's ridiculous shape. He's like, I get the hardest thing done in the morning. And I said, it's not even hard to me anymore because it's hard when I'm in it.
Yeah.
But it's not hard for me to go to do it at 4:45 in the morning because I've been doing it for 25 years. That way. So get that stuff right. Get your own goals on, right? Get your own goals on paper, what you're thinking. Dream big. Now, I was going to say to you, when I sat and made my 2020 vision, my 2030, because I've been in this 4 decades that I worked, right? And nothing ever, so for some reason, I wanted to write this 10-year plan and it was a billion, but my team wasn't ready for that. So I rolled out a $350 million goal. And next thing I know, we're 24 months in and we're going to hit 200 pretty quickly. So I'm like, now they're ready. So I waited. So I think you have to have a little compassion for yourself too. And, you know, I love to talk to people that are successful in any field or thing. Like I could be in Florida and see this guy that has this massive yacht. It doesn't necessarily mean I want the yacht. I just want to know how he got there.
Nice.
So I think get yourself right first, right? Then find the right people to work with. It could be, you have to know who you are as a person. So find those people that align with you from integrity and values first.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen, here's the thing. When you think of this business, I felt fortunate. I got in here by mistake. It wasn't well thought out and it worked out really amazing, right? But you think about this, 300 advisors in the business, there's been 300 advisors for a gazillion years. Mm-hmm. There's 40% of them are over 55 and only 9% are under 30. Wow. And we talk about the boomers and there's some number like $184 trillion in motion by 2050. Mm-hmm. This opportunity is amazing.
Yeah.
But you have to really get in if you're new, get your licenses, get your credentials, you know. Remember one thing I learned from the Kinder brothers, which don't exist anymore. They both passed away. They were amazing, but they taught, think about their pocket, not yours, mm-hmm. but do the right stuff all the time and it'll all come back to you. But if you do that and you stay focused, you could have a really, really nice career and have the financial freedom. And by the way, it doesn't cost as much money as it does to open a lot of businesses.
You're right. Yeah.
Especially if you hook up with a firm. You know, and listen, do your due diligence, you know, nothing's perfect, but find what works for you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a lot of firm owners on the podcast, but I know your business. I respect it. It's the firm I would wish I would have joined if I knew about it when I was getting into the business because of the way you build it. And I've seen your advisors grow really fast. So if anybody's listening, you're like, man, I'm lonely. I'm getting into the business. I need to put a rocket ship on it. Call Paul, reach out to his team, like just learn what's out there. I think that's healthy. But apart from that, commercial for you.
Thank you. And listen, at 100%, even if you just need to talk, like yeah. I'm a big believer in what I just said to you is really scary to me because this business is so critical to people. The emotional side of this business has got lost today. Everyone's talking about numbers and AUM and this and that, but they're forgetting the impact. I'll tell you one quick story. A friend of ours is actually took a job with us, and she's been one of my wife's closest friends since my wife was 11 years old. And she works in a medical office, and she's helping us now just do APSs, trying to get doctor's records, okay? Part-time.
Yep.
So she texted me and said, I've finally got a job at Barnum. And I'm like, oh my God, amazing. What are you doing? And she told me. So I said, hey, I called her and I said, let me just tell you something. So I said, listen, these records you're getting are really important because these clients, we see this. I've seen this a lot over the years where clients get sick, pass away during underwriting. The yep. records take months to get. And I said, what you're doing is so critical to this process. And she goes, oh my God. She says, when I go back to work tomorrow, we get those people ask us to give them records. And we're like, this is such a pain in the neck. And they don't even want to do it. And they give them a hard time because I got to tell the ladies in the office like how important this is. That is missing. And it on the AUM side, like someone outlives their money. How we can't let that happen. And we need enough good advisors that get that. And listen, the industries, I read a stat the other day that only 25 companies make up 87.6% of the assets under management in the industry.
That's wild.
Right. So hook up with one of those. Make sure you find the right one. Do you want to be someone that gets, you know, individualized coaching and development, or do you want to just be a number?
Mm-hmm.
And then make sure you know, think of the resources you need to grow today and tomorrow and just align with them, you know?
Yeah. My story, I bounced around. I think it was, it took me a longer period of time to figure out, like, oh, what do I need? And I had to then kind of build it for myself. I would definitely not advocate that. It would take longer. I was able to figure it out. And
well, you did, but I knew what you said earlier. Like you were this curious kid.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting you and I knew, unfortunately, that you were going to go and leave. And at the time, the markets were different. Now the world's flat, like I said. So, you know, you're a 10%er. So there's that saying, right? That, and we have what we call executive council where we interview not experienced producers, but new ones mm-hmm. where they go into a group interview of five people before they get hired, right? So all we're trying to do is it's called the 70-20-10 rule. You're a 10. So 10% of the people that get hired in this industry are going to make it no matter where they go work. Mm. That's yourself. 20% of the people are not going to make it no matter what you do. They just, there's something there. It could be their drive. It could be rejection. It could be the hard, you know, whatever it is. They just don't. And then 70% leadership makes a difference.
Wow.
So what we've tried to do is eliminate the 20 because it's unfair to them, not just us. It's them and us, right? Because this, you spend all that time and energy and then you no longer make it. Obviously, you want the 10s. And then on the 70%, we try to be not cute. We want to get the 50 of the 70. So 20 we don't. But if we could find the right 50 that are entrepreneurial, that are coachable, that think big, that are have the integrity and the values. So we're trying to work with that 60%. That's how we're trying to do the right thing. And we're not just doing it for us. Mm-hmm. We're doing it for the clients. We're doing it and for them and their families, you know. By the way, when we hire these young kids to go on teams, we meet with their parents.
Oh, wow.
So we used to do spousal, but these kids are coming off the campus. Mm-hmm. So now we meet with the parents. I probably, in my main office here in Shelton, I probably have 7 or 8 kids that are working here that moved here from other parts, and their parents are paying for them to live because they believe in the vision. But if they didn't meet with us, I don't know if they would believe in that.
Yeah.
So find it. And, you know, if you're not a 10%er, find the right people to hook up. And if you are a 10%er, you know, there's lots of great places out there that have great leadership and great resources. We're not the only one.
Yep.
And find that person, because if you can grow faster and have more fun, that's kind of what you need. And here's the thing, like when you look at the world of dollars and cents in the business, people have not realized that it's the same dollar. It's just how it comes to you.
Yeah.
When it's all so comes out, there's only so much.
Mm-hmm.
And how it gets paid or not get paid is really not. It's just you have to know and understand how you're getting it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Man, this was good, brother. I appreciate it.
Same. And listen, thank you for doing this. I can't wait to go back and listen to some of your episodes, and I'm glad we reconnected.
Yeah, that'll be great.
You bring a lot. And for the advisors listening, like, follow his lead, do his coaching program, listen to what he's doing. Here's a guy that's done it. And virtually, like you said, you built it. So that's the formula you want to follow. And thank you for coaching people, because the industry needs more people like you.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, it is. We all get challenges to face, but it is a worthy career path for sure.
Oh my God! It's if you're the right person, it's the greatest career. Yep. If you're not, then it could be the worst career.
No doubt. All right, brother. Good seeing you. We'll talk soon.
You got it, dude.
Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity, or you know somebody that would be potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.